Part 2, Chapter 2, in which our heroes begin their descent. Quote, j'ai dû voyager, distraire les enchantements assemblés sur mon cerveau, sur la mer que j'aimais comme si elle eût dû me laver d'une souillère, je voyais se lever la croix consolatrice. Translation. Arthur Rimbaud, Une saison en enfer, alcumé du verbe, that is, a season in hell. I had to travel, turn away the enchantments gathered on my brain, on the sea, which I loved as if she would wash me of a stain, I saw the consoling cross raise itself. At 6 o'clock in the morning, rosy-fingered Dawn ran her liquid fingers across the eyelids of Harvey and Mahogany on the foredeck, then backstroked her way up the coast to relax on the beaches of Tirrenia. Arrgh! Growled Harvey, leaping up and throwing himself into the water. Mahogany rose and watched him. It was good to see his friend splash about like a clumsy dolphin, reflecting the energy around him, the golden sun, the moving air, the double azure of the sea and sky. The first day passed, and the night, and the next day, and the next night, and the ship sailed on without incident past the emerald waters of Elba, the trade ships of Civita Vecchia, and the tourists of Anzio. All the while, Harvey and Mahogany kept a religious silence, until on the third day the captain said, "We will reach Naples by nightfall." Just then they were swallowed in a terrible storm. "Lower the yard! Reef the sail!" cried Mahogany, but his shout was drowned in the yell of the wind. They scrambled to reef the sail and fasten whatever could be fastened, but still the wind rose. It came from every quarter, lifting the sea mountain high, and soon the ship was left to herself. Now she climbed above the dark pit of hell, now she sank beneath the white peaks of heaven. Death was in every wave. Death was in every wave. Death was in every wave. A wall of water shattered the mast, and Harvey and Mahogany ducked below deck. When the storm passed, they emerged to a darkness more tangible than the one they had left. Mahogany spied a woman with a candle walking upon a narrow ledge. "Where are we?" he asked. "La Grotta di Coccio," she replied. "La Grotta di Coccio?" echoed Harvey. "La Grotta di Coccio," echoed the cave. "State attenti," she warned. "Quantunque facile sia scendere, difficile sia salire." Translation from Dante's Inferno, Canto 2, lines 45-46. "Beware, it will be as difficult to ascend as it is easy to descend." Unfortunately, the damage from the storm left our heroes no choice but to drift deeper into the cavern. After several hours, which seemed like several days, they emerged to a craterous lake. Footnote. Lake Avernus, mythological entrance to the underworld. Relieved to have escaped the oppressive darkness, they found little cause to rejoice, for a noxious vapor rose from the lagoon and made respiration all but impossible. The water was smooth and black, and the only mark on its surface was the splash of an occasional bird who, overcome by the fumes, plummeted to its death. Harvey and Mahogany were soon rendered unconscious and drifted into a narrow man-made canal. From there they continued to a smaller lake, down another canal, through the Gulf of Pozzuoli, and into the Gulf of Naples. "See Naples and die!" yelled a group of tourists as their barge missed our heroes by the space of a second. The ship sailed on, maneuvering gracefully through the crowded port and out to sea. Had they been awake, our heroes might have admired the departing picture. a pyramid of white buildings, and rank upon rank of balconies, windows, and roofs, piled up from the blue water until they reached the crest of the town. There, the castle of St. Elmo topped the scene, giving it symmetry, emphasis, and completeness. They continued past the island of Capri, along the Amalfi coast, and onward to the Gulf of Plicastro. Still our heroes slept. In fact, the Nelly sailed without assistance for 4 days and 3 nights until, on the evening of the 4th day, a thunderclap broke their sleep, so that they started like one who is waked by force. The narrator intervenes. Darest thou, O reader, walk with me toward the unknown region, where neither ground there is for the feet, nor any path to follow? No map there, nor guide, nor touch of human hand. I know it not, O reader, nor dost thou. All is a blank before us. All awaits undreamed of in that inaccessible land. As the day departed, our heroes prepared for the trial ahead. The Nelly was approaching a small gorge that ran between the mainland on the left and an island on the right. Mahogany attempted to repair the ship's steering and was glad of the work, for it occupied his mind and afforded him a respite from his troubles. When you have to attend to things, he thought, the reality fades. The inner truth is hidden. Luckily. Soon they could see the entrance to the gorge. It was announced by 2 enormous rocks, one of which reached majestically to the sky and whose peak was swallowed in a cloud. The mouth of a cave yawned from the middle of it, looking westward and turning toward Erebus, footnote, Erebus, the underworld. Mahogany stood in wonder, gazing at the magnificent peak, until his attention was called to a singular sight on his left. There, atop the cliffs, reclining in a verdant field, were 9 women of incomparable beauty. They were surrounded by a scattering of human bones, and as they moved to the edge of the cliff, they sang with a voice of rare enchantment. Come, dear captain, and hear our call. No man can sail past without bathing in the sweetness of our song. And he who listens will go away not only charmed, but wiser, for we know all that your author has composed, and can recount everything in the course of your career. The narrator intervenes. O noble captain, bravest of the brave, what words can recount this tale? What reasons make it credible? What plaudits praise you, though they be hyperbole on top of hyperbole? You, alone, intrepid. You, alone, magnanimous. With only your emptiness as a shield. Mahogany steered toward the intoxicating sound, and was about to run ashore, when Harvey broke into song. Imitating the delicious tones of the shore-bound sirens, Harvey released his friend from the perilous spell and enabled him to resume his course through the canyon. The sirens, moved in like fashion by the song they thought only themselves capable of, rushed with heaving breast to the edge of the cliff, threw themselves in the water, and swam after the ship. Tragic as this was for the young women, it was fortunate for our heroes who, steering clear of a whirlpool that guarded one side of the entrance to the canyon, glanced up to see a hideous 6-necked monster thrust her 6 heads from the overlooking cave. One of the heads seized Harvey about the waist and lifted him sprawling into the air. The monster was about to dash him against the rocks, which would have ended the story of our illustrious captain, as well as the story of all mankind, when the other 5 heads suddenly threw themselves at the delicious singers swimming for the ship. Soon the captain was released, and all 6 mouths fell upon the sirens, crushing their bones with powerful jaws and tearing their skin with razor-sharp teeth. the lovely white throats that minutes before had given voice to the most enchanting of sounds, now rent the walls of the canyon with screams that shook the sky. Gasping and coughing up blood, they stretched out their hands to the ship in immortal agony. But the Nelly sailed on, moving out of danger, and Harvey and Mahogany could only look in sorrow at the foaming water, stained with the spattering of blood. They would not see a more horrible sight in all their journeys. That evening they slept a sleep of terror and relief, and they were still shaken 2 days later at Kerkira, where they swung anchor and came to rest.